Marini's Media.
The heating's on, it's getting darker earlier and earlier, so why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week. For only 100 of your English pence every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. It's a big week in the Champions League. PSG, Real Madrid and Inter, big names currently heading out. And PSG. And exciting matchups on the way this week too. We look ahead at those and back on a weekend that saw Sesky football in Monaco, more moaning from Messi and the dawn of a new Dortmund teen superstar. No, another one. All that plus Pards is Sophia's choice in this Totally Football Show European edition in association with Paddy Power. Hello, continentally minded listener, and welcome to another European Totally Football Show with Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, James.
Yes, indeed. Same to you. James Horncastle's with us.
Hello.
Also, Julien Laurens.
Bonjour.
And it's a big hello to Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James.
What a weekend. So many things happening and so many things about to happen with the Champions League as well.
You're right, James. I thought Saturday was quite exceptional in terms of the football that we saw between, you know, Mourinho against Pep, between Borussia Dortmund, Moukoko's debut, of course, historic debuts, but Haaland quadruple as well. We had Bayern who struggled a bit. We had the Orlando penalty shootout in MLS, if you like. Saint-Etienne losing again 7 times in a row, which is a club record. And then Sunday was not as strong maybe as Saturday, but we still had a lot. And we had Atleti Barca on Saturday. And Sunday, we still had some good stuff as well all over Europe, especially in Italy with the Milan-Napoli game, which I thought was fantastic. So, yeah, it was all really good weekend.
And we have to say, James, that many things will happen as well, but many things did happen too, like Spain beating Germany 6-0. I just had to say that.
Oh, that's bad. Alvaro, that's strong. That is strong.
Such old news.
It had to be said.
Well, we might have a little chat about the Nations League. What would you call it? Semi-final and final, which are coming up imminently in 11 months' time, October 6th to the 10th, 2021. Later on, you don't have to stick around for that bit, Rafa. We can just handle that with Jules and James and Alvaro. But right now, let's get your moments of this weekend. James.
Well, James, we had some Ibrakadabra, but is the spell broken? Because Zlatan looks like he'll now be out for a month after a scan on his the muscle injury he sustained in Naples yesterday. We had a roaring comeback from Inter, and at least for a few hours or so, Sassuolo were top of the table in Serie A and are being compared with Leicester in Italy.
Wow, that's exciting. Jules, what was your moment of the weekend? Was it PSG losing at Monaco?
Yeah, that has to be, unfortunately, my moment of the weekend. Capitulation again after being 2-0 up at halftime, cruising, even if they were not playing that great, and then ended up losing the game 3-2. I mean, it was a shame.
Sesk.
I had Horncastle trolling me, texting me. He never watches Ligue 1. The evening where he clearly has nothing to do on Friday night, he watches the game and my team is losing the way they did. And I just, right. I kept having his messages popping up on my phone.
Was he sexting you?
He was a bit sexting me, to be fair to him, yeah. I mean, talent recognizes talent, so he knew what he was talking about, you know?
James has been a sesk pest for quite a while.
Rafa, what was your moment of the weekend?
Oh, there were quite a few, James. Erling Haaland scoring 4 goals, even though Lucien Favre thought there was only 3 of them. Bayern dropping points at home, which doesn't happen all the time against Werder Bremen. And one of the best own goals of the season, Lukas Radetzky for Leverkusen. Wonderful air shot, I guess. And spinning into his own net, the ball.
Rafi, remember all those Sundays where you used to troll Jules about the goalkeeping in Ligue 1?
Well, we used to troll you as well about the goalkeeping in Serie A. That was not much better.
No. The goalkeeping in Serie A was always good. It was between the Bundesliga and Ligue 1, which is really bad.
Well, at least we have some goals, so.
Alvaro, step in with your moment of the weekend.
Well, it could have been Real Sociedad beating Cádiz and staying at the top of the table, but it has to be Barcelona losing 1-0 at Wanda Metropolitano against Atletico. The weak introductory note was Lionel Messi arriving at the airport and saying that he was tired of being always the problem. When reporters ask him about his stay at Barcelona. And the last note of the week has been Gerard Piqué just suffering a really serious injury that is going to keep him out of the squad and competitive football until at least spring. So more problems for Barcelona. In a nutshell, this is the most important thing of the week in Spain.
Absolutely. They've got a trip to Dinamo Kiev coming up this midweek without Messi. He's been left out of the squad. Some big games coming up in the midweek round, and a couple really stand out. Paris Saint-Germain against Leipzig and Inter hosting Real Madrid. Let's get on then to those midweek Champions League matches.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Chelsea are at Rennes on Tuesday. Man United are hosting Başakşehir, but the standout game of the evening is the other clash in Man United's group, which sees Paris Saint-Germain taking on Leipzig, the team that beat them 2-1 last time out.
Angelino, der schon im Strafraum, gute Schussposition. Kunku und Kunku zieht mal. Da ist der Ausgleich aus dem Nichts. 1-1 von Christopher Nkunku. Super rausgespielt.
Der Schütze auf dem Platz, Hatzenbecker nicht dabei. Forsberg läuft an, Forsberg Doppelschritt und dann drin. Das ja! Ding. Jawohl.
Jawohl.
Geht doch.
All right, that was last time. 2-1 victory, as we say, for RB Leipzig. Since then, Jules, what's been going on with Paris Saint-Germain? They beat Rennes, but this Friday, a disastrous performance in the big game against Monaco.
You're right, James, especially after the break. The first half was okay. They didn't play that great, but they scored 2 goals. Kylian Mbappe, they could have had 2 or 3 more because they had 2 ruled out for offside via VAR. One, especially the Moise Kean one. That was really, one was really tight over the two, but in the end, only 2 counted. And at 2-0 at halftime, even in Monaco, you thought, okay, this should be okay. They're controlling the game well. They have the threat of Mbappe up front. And then Niko Kovac, to be fair to him, changed pretty much everything at halftime, brought on Cesc Fabregas and changed his formation a little bit. And Fabregas, really, with the way he played, his intelligence, playing between the line, created so much problems for PSG that they could not cope. On top of that, PSG creating their own problems, as they often do when they'll be under pressure. Abdou Diallo, who's made so many mistakes this season, I've lost count.
Is he Paris born and bred, Jules?
No, thank God he isn't. But he's a former Monaco player, obviously, before going to Germany and then coming back home to France. But it's one of those where if you learn from your mistake, I've got no problem. But now it's too many that he keeps making. And this time he gave away the ball, gave away a penalty straight after against Kevin Volland, got sent off too. And they lost 3-2. And in fairness, I think he deserved from Monaco to win the game, seeing what they did in the second half. And what I'm more worried about before the Leipzig game for PSG is that with Kimpembe being suspended, that means Diallo will start that game. And I think that's scaring me.
Just on the subject of Monaco, how influential was Cesc in that second half? And how old is he now?
He must be 33.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's from the 1987 generation with Piqué and Messi.
Right. Okay. And a word or two on his performance in that second half, Jules?
I mean, Cesc was incredible. He doesn't play he doesn't play every game. And Kovac, I think, has used him well in the past. He's got some very talented youngsters. This was a very young Monaco team. They averaged 23 years of age. They had an 18-year-old at right back, Matsima, who's going to be, I think, really good. They've got Fofana and Tchouaméni in midfield, who are very exciting, really strong players, but they're only 19 and 20 as well. So, and you saw in the first half, Fofana gave away the 2 goals for PSG, one being a penalty. And you saw they lacked a bit of experience and they lacked someone who, by just with his positioning could create problem to the PSG defense. And that's exactly what Cesc played. He plays as a number 10, really close to Kevin Volland when they went from the 4-4-2 to the 4-2-3-1 formation. And that worked perfectly. The PSG could not pick him up. He could have had even more influence, I think, and more impact because they could have easily scored two more goals. Monaco, they created so many chances. And all of that was thanks to Cesc. And I just think even at 33, even if he can't run anymore, even when he was younger, he could not run. So now he can run even less. But the talent that he has and the intelligence especially, every people who play football should watch his 45 minutes of football because it was just an incredible moment of intelligence of how you should play football, even if you're not physically at your best. And I just think that enough just changed the game completely.
Jules, is this why Thomas Tuchel was playing Danilo at centre-back in other games? Because when he played him in midfield, which is his natural position, he didn't know what to do. He couldn't pick up Cesc Fabregas whatsoever.
Yeah, maybe there was something. I was expecting the little sentence from Tuchel at the end of the game. Say, see, I told you why I don't play him in midfield. He didn't go that far, but it was not very good from Danilo, who could be on the bench on Tuesday night, by the
but
way.
But does this make it big for Tuchel, this game against Leipzig then? Because how many defeats have PSG already had this season? And then this feels critical, this upcoming match in midweek.
Basically, to qualify, you need about 10 or 11 points in this group.
Mm. Right, as it stands, one of Man United, RB Leipzig or PSG is going to miss out. And currently, Man United and RB Leipzig are 3 points ahead of PSG. It's Paris who are in line for Thursday night football, Jules.
I know. This is a must-win game, of course. Must-win game. I can't believe you're trolling me on Thursday night football. Must-win game, of course, against Leipzig. Neymar, he's back. He played a bit the last half hour against Monaco. He was dreadful. Clearly didn't want to be there. It's okay. I hope he's in better form on Tuesday.
Didn't want to be there in what sense?
It looked like he didn't want to be playing, really. He brought absolutely nothing to the game. I mean, it's either you're coming back from injury and the plan is that you play a little bit to get a bit of match fitness, especially before Tuesday, which is the far more bigger game than the one on Friday night. But I don't know, if you don't want to play, maybe I'll tell the coach to do something. But he came on and there was just nothing there, absolutely nothing.
Wow, okay. What about Leipzig, Rafa? What's their form coming into this one?
They weren't that convincing in their 1-1 draw against Frankfurt. They changed things around in the second half, as Nagelsmann often do, to get a bit more of a grip of the game. But it felt like a typical post-international break game. A little bit disjointed, no real rhythm. Frankfurt made it difficult for them and ultimately a very, very disappointing result. But I guess because, Bayern were dropping points, and Gladbach were dropping points just behind them. It's not, not the worst result. And we've seen some of their best performances in the season, actually in the Champions League, where they seem to be able to up their game. Of course, it didn't happen against Man United, but against PSG, we saw just how good they were in the first leg. So I think there's a real opportunity here for them to land another big blow.
But they're currently 2 points off by Munich at the top of the Bundesliga. Four teams packed into those 2 points and what looks like being a very sensational title race till probably around Christmas, and then Bayern probably race away with it. All right then, Alvaro, what's your call on Tuesday night, PSG, RB Leipzig?
Well, I think PSG is going to win it, but if PSG loses and United beats Istanbul Başakşehir, then Leipzig and Manchester United could fix the game, to put it some sort of way, and get a draw, which is something that the PSG wouldn't want, of course. So it's a very dangerous one for PSG, and I agree with Jules. I think that Neymar didn't look sharp at all, and he was dribbling backwards too much in the game against Monaco, and he has to basically change his direction and go forward, because otherwise PSG won't win.
Mm, seems fair. Are Man United going to beat Başakşehir in the other game in that group? Well, they did beat Leipzig 5-0 in their last home game in the Champions League. But of course, lost to the Turkish champions in Istanbul last time out. That's going to be a key match as well. Elsewhere on Tuesday, Alvaro, could Barcelona be in trouble? They're on top of their group with 9 points from the 9 available. But this Tuesday's clash looks like potentially a real, banana skin. Away at Kiev, who caused them real problems last time, despite the fact that they had 13 first-team players out because of coronavirus tests. This time, a lot of those players are back for Dynamo Kiev, whereas Barcelona are coming off a toothless defeat to Atletico Madrid. They're without Messi. They've got Gerard Piqué and Sergio Roberto both out injured after the 1-0 defeat at the Wanda Metropolitano. What do you think?
Well, and let's don't forget that Ansu Fati, the best player in this season, he's out until at least February, and that Frenkie de Jong won't be travelling to Kiev either because Ronald Koeman has decided that de Jong and Messi needed to rest a little bit. So I think that, strangely, the Champions League this season for teams like Manchester City, Barcelona, even Sevilla, has had like a therapeutic effect. It's been quite soothing. I mean, in La Liga, Barcelona is doing terribly. I mean, they are so far from the top of the table. However, in the Champions League, they've done the best game, their best game this season. They beat Juve. I would say that they should have beaten them for a bigger margin. So I think that Barcelona knows, and Koeman knows as well, that if they win this game against Dynamo Kiev, the next couple of Champions League games, Koeman will be able to rotate a lot, and probably the squad will have some rest because they need to rest. All that said, Barcelona is bad this season. It looked like at the beginning of the season that there was a little bit of an evolution with Koeman. Then the team got stagnant, and now I can see some involution in the team. I mean, players that look good at the beginning, like Trincao, Pedri, even Serginho Dest. I mean, they haven't improved a lot over the last games. The defense is not looking good without Gerard Piqué. Sergio Roberto is out as well. Lionel Messi the other day against Atletico de Madrid, and I'm talking about the league now, not the Champions League, lost 23 balls, and it looks like everything has to go, or every attack has to go through his feet. So maybe this game against Dynamo Kiev is a good chance for Griezmann or for some other players who are eclipsed, if I may, by Lionel Messi. Make a step up and give Koeman a reason to believe that they can be match winners as well, because at the minute Barcelona relies too much on Lionel Messi, and Messi is not delivering in every game at all.
And as he says, he's tired of always being the problem.
Yeah, that happened on Thursday. Messi arrived at Barcelona airport after being with Argentina in international duty, and apparently the representatives from the tax office and some reporters as well, they were waiting for Messi at the airport. And Messi was probably tired after a long trip. And he said in the airport that he was tired of being always the problem at Barcelona. Well, these are the kind of quotes that 5 weeks before the 1st of January, they are quite concerning, because let's don't forget that Lionel Messi's contract expires in June 2021. But anyway, I think that Barcelona right now shouldn't think too much about the future. Last season, for example, Barcelona was the favorite to win La Liga, probably. This season, I think that the best thing that a Barcelona fan can expect at this stage is reaching February or March with all their options open. They're still not too far from the first spot in La Liga and still in the Champions League last 16. But at the minute, it doesn't look like this is going to be a season of silverware for Barcelona.
Right, they're in the Liga top 16, but only just. They're down in 12th place at the moment, which is their worst for ages and ages. A faraway season that they ended up winning the league in, but that doesn't look like necessarily happening this time around. What actually happened against Atletico with Diego Simeone picking up his first ever victory over the Catalans?
In La Liga, yeah, because then in the Champions League, I think that Atletico de Madrid has knocked out Barcelona twice. But in La Liga, yes, you're right. And it's not that Atletico has been bad against Barcelona. In many of those games, in that sequence that goes back to 2012 or 2011, I believe, Atletico has been good, but for one reason or another, they never managed to win. But this time, Barcelona is more fragile than ever. And Atletico has more certainties. Look, I'm going to make like a, if I may, an interleague comment, because I'm going to jump to Premier League for a second, because Jose Mourinho, after beating Manchester City the other day, when asked about why did he win, he said that it's important for a team to have principles if you don't have any time to train. And I think that Atletico de Madrid has very solid principles, because they've been with the same manager for 8 years. Mm. Barcelona is just having a new manager who has been there for 2.5 months, 3 months, and Barcelona needs training time. Atletico de Madrid knows how to do what they do best, and I think that became very obvious from the beginning. Atletico is a team that is a mature team. They are more solid, and they beat Barcelona comfortably, to the point that Marca today reported that some sources from Atletico de Madrid players and staff had been very surprised with the lack of quality and the lack of character of Barcelona. They never seen a Barcelona like this. So that tells you a little bit the state of both teams at the minute. Atletico de Madrid knows what they are doing, even though they are not brilliant yet. And Barcelona is still a walking question tag.
If Barcelona are going to have a season without silverware, what are the prospects for Atletico, who are currently in second place, but with two games in hand on the surprise leaders, Real Sociedad, and 3 points behind them?
Well, of course, members of Atletico de Madrid will never say that they are the favourites to win La Liga, but they are definitely a candidate to win La Liga. I mean, that's the way I see it. And probably right now, on the 23rd or 24th of November, they are the main candidate to win La Liga, because you can expect Real Sociedad to have a dip in their form. However, Atletico has the know-how to win a league title. They did it in 2014, and there are some players over there, like Luis Suarez, for example, that they are going to bring a lot of experience in the right time. So I think that Atletico de Madrid has to be the right candidate. Right now, they are still very good defensively. They have the best defense record in La Liga. And when it comes to scoring and to create up front, they've got enough players to make a difference.
Wednesday night, they're in action in the Champions League, hosting Lokomotiv Moscow, who are 2 points behind them in the group. Atletico currently in second place to the remarkable Bayern Munich, who are on a 14-game winning streak in the competition. Next up, let's hear about something else from the Bundesliga, and it's Erling Haaland's 4 goals at the weekend and why they didn't even make him the most talked-about youngster at Borussia Dortmund.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Haaland in the Mitte. Jetzt nochmal Pass. Haaland, Haaland, Haaland! Danny, du wusstest es! 5-2!
Four, Rafa. Four. Four.
Yeah.
Four.
How do you say quadruple in German? Vivier.
Viererpack.
Viererpack.
A what? A Viererpack.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Erling Haaland got this weekend against Hertha Berlin in a 5-2 win for Lucien Favre's Borussia Dortmund. But he's yesterday's news, Daddy-O, because all the headlines were for the young fellow who replaced him 10 minutes from time, Rafa, Youssoufa Moukoko.
Before the game, yes. After the game, not so much. I mean, Dortmund got his debut out of the way, so at least, you know, the hype can now settle at more realistic levels. But of course, the four goals from Erling Haaland kind of took some of the headlines and the limelight away from Moukoko. But it is going to remain an interesting story. And the guy, you know, if he gets anywhere near sort of the amazing performances he's had at the youth level, then he's going to be sensational. But I guess the biggest story is that, you know, Dortmund showed that even though they're still a little bit slow and a little bit open at the back, Haaland is now seemingly going to another level, and I think is becoming now the Erling Haaland team, which, considering that this guy has only been with them since January of 2020, just shows you how he has developed. And Christoph Biermann was making the point today on the Starcast pod that maybe in Haaland, Dortmund now have found finally the replacement for Lewandowski, in the sense that there is a guy that can, just through sheer force of nature by himself, maybe push Dortmund over the line. I mean, Bayern look vulnerable, certainly more so than usual. So maybe Haaland can do it. I mean, it'd be great for the league, and of course great for Dortmund.
Raf, Jules and I were quite critical of Haaland's performance against Bayern Munich because we expect 20-year-old strikers to be absolutely flawless at that age. But I must say, that second half performance, it was astonishing. Like the speed he shows to basically take advantage of a miscontrol from one of the Hertha's defenders completely punishes him. some of his movement was just absolutely out of this world. And even like his, for such a big guy, I think in the first half he had a couple of chances where his link-up play, back to goal, in tight spaces, playing back heels and all this sort of, it was unreal how good he was. It was one of the, you know, in terms of performances of the weekend, Jules highlighted Cesc on Friday night. But that second half display was as near to a perfect striker display as I think you could possibly ask for. It was jaw dropping.
Crikey, it was. And James, you might say that Haaland's foreplay got Lucien Favre so excited that he didn't even keep count, because Favre asked him afterwards, "Oh, you scored 3 goals." And Hanna was like, "No, it was 4, and it might have been more if you hadn't taken me off."
Ha! You hadn't brought him off. Right. But what about Moukoko? Why is everyone so excited about this 16-year-old, 16 years and 1 day old when he took the field against Hertha Berlin, which is a Bundesliga record, and indeed the league had changed the rules to allow him to make his debut so early?
The answer's in the question, James. I mean, he is so young and has been so prolific. At youth level, he's got 141 goals in 88 games at youth level for Dortmund, which is,
I mean,
just
the other
incredible.
Way around would be impressive, but that's incredible.
Either way would be very impressive, but of course scoring more goals than games you've played in is hugely impressive. And you know, this is a guy who, since moving up to the seniors as far as training is concerned, he hasn't been able to play until Saturday, but he's been training with the team since the start of the season, has not looked out of place at all. Of course, he's still learning. You know, some of the tactical behavior is still a little bit raw, and his decision making needs to improve. But everyone's just feels that he is ready to play, and that's why Favre has been almost working, I don't want to say against the wishes of the club, because you know the club are trying to dampen down the excitement, but Favre, who just looks at the player and doesn't care about all the headlines and all the age discussion, just puts him in and feels he's absolutely ready. So there's this kind of uneasy you know, relationship between the club being hugely excited and playing up this idea that, you know, he's a young superstar in the making, but at the same time trying, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. But and Favre just going, "No, I don't care. He is so good." And he is, I think, someone who maybe further down the line this season, and maybe even the Champions League, can actually play in place for Haaland, who's more or less starting all the time because Dortmund don't have another number 9 on the bench or in the squad.
Mm. Some of the comments about him suggesting that he's kind of a generational talent, that possibly the most talented at this age young player that the Bundesliga has ever seen come through. It's very hard to gauge that from the various YouTube compilations that are out there. Have you seen anything of him beyond the 10 minutes that he had against Hertha?
No, because I've never watched any under-19 Dortmund game, you know, in its entirety. I spoke to someone who does, and it basically said to me, it's pointless watching those games because the guy scores so many goals that you just see immediately he's totally... If there's an opposite of being out of your depth... Everyone else, I guess, is out of their depth compared to him. He just plays football on a completely different level. And there was just absolutely no point keeping him with the under-19. So that just shows you how good he is already.
Mm. All right. Well, Dortmund are in action Tuesday night in Group F. They'll be facing Bruges, who they beat 3-0 last time out. Currently, Dortmund are a point clear of Lazio at the top of that little group in the Champions League. Lazio will be hosting Zenit, who they had a 1-1 draw with away in St. Petersburg a couple of weeks back. Oh, have we had any word on Lazio's tests?
Well, James, I mean, this is going to be the big curiosity before this game against Zenit at the Olympico, because Lazio will once again undergo testing with UEFA's laboratory SynLab, which has tested some of their players positive in the past, notably Ciro Immobile. And they've had to play their last 2 match days against Bruges and Zenit away from home with depleted teams. So there's an investigation obviously going on at the moment about the laboratory that they were using in Avellino for their Serie A testing. Lazio are not formally under investigation. In fact, they might be victims in all of this, because they put their faith in a lab which, this investigation in Avellini is ultimately into fraud and faulty PPE. And the faulty PPE in this case would be the PCR tests that have been supplied to Lazio and then processed by this laboratory, which have come back negative in some cases, when, you know, some players have tested positive in UEFA's test. So we'll have to see what happens. But Immobile was back. He was cleared to play at the weekend in the game against Crotone, which kind of was played out in water polo-like conditions. It was amazing that the pitch actually held and didn't get worse under a deluge in Crotone. There's been flash flooding there, which has been pretty devastating for the locals. But Immobile scored, what, his 107th goal for Lazio, which means he's now level with Beppe Signori, James, and his size 4 feet.
Lazio just got their own plane. They've got a Lazio plane, which they used to go down to Crotone, I saw.
And Luis Alberto was not too happy with the purchase of the plane, was he?
No, because he went on Twitch. I don't have a Twitch account. I don't know if any of you guys do, but he was doing a live broadcast in between getting his new PlayStation 5. And was saying that they keep buying things and they're not paying us. So some dispute over obviously at the end of last season when clubs were cutting wages because of the pandemic, whether they'd be getting them restored or not. Luis Alberto, there was some doubt as to whether he would actually play in the Crotone game because apparently the hierarchy at Lazio were considering whether to punish him for that comment. Instead, it looks like they'll just fine him.
Made him fly on the aeroplane, which was so terrifying, the landing at Crotone. There's a video of it with all the Lazio players.
Well, also, I'm pretty sure this is one of those Boeing 737s which have been kind of decommissioned or only just now being allowed to fly again. And it's like a leasing arrangement with a Bulgarian airline. I mean, it's just utterly
it's
bonkers.
Very Lotito. Yeah. Interestingly, interesting, Lazio came back from the game via Alitalia. Make of that you will. The other games on Tuesday are from Group E, where both Chelsea and Sevilla can wrap up qualifying this week. They're both on 7 points. The other two teams in the group are on one. Rennes will be hosting Chelsea, while Sevilla make the trip to Krasnodar, who caused them some problems last time. But Chelsea and Sevilla looking good to book a place in the last 16 soon. Right. Very shortly, we'll get on to Wednesday's games. And before that, quick word about the Europa League.
On this week's From the Horse's Mouth podcast, the lads are joined by Shane Lowry, fresh from his Masters performance at Augusta. Here's what Shane's caddy was too scared to say to Tiger Woods after his disastrous 10 on the 12th.
Because any time he hit a bad drive or an average drive, he'd say to Joe, his caddy, that was like one of yours. And we stood on the 13th tee and Bo said to me, what do you think he'd say if I said to him, I bet you wish Joe hit that one?
Search Paddy Power on your podcast provider to listen now. Paddy Power. 18+, BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Hey, Thursday night football, we all love it, and particularly when it involves, do you know, there's a lot of games actually looking at the, wow, a lot of fixtures, but one really stands out, and it is Lille Milan. Both teams with impressive victories at the weekend, and Lille, who had a very fine win as well when they faced Milan earlier on in this Europa League campaign at San Siro. Hey, James.
Yeah, I was really impressed by them. It was a really disciplined performance. They were tactically superior to Milan. And, you know, as Jules well knows, they've got some really good young players. I mean, it's quite interesting, the link between the two clubs, because Elliott, the hedge fund, obviously owns AC Milan. And, I think they've loaned some money to the owners of Lille as well. And in some respects, the projects are quite similar in terms of how they're investing in their playing staff. And, Renato Sanchez won't be playing in this game, but he was outstanding in the first leg, if we can call it that, in the group stages before this doubleheader. But they've also got some really good kids, like Sven Botman, the Dutch centre-back. And Jules, they've been doing well in Ligue 1, but there's some off-the-field politics going on around their sporting director, who hasn't been seen since August.
Yeah, that's right. Luis Campos, who, has great reputation, in football for being this guy who finds those very good young players, especially we saw at Monaco. He built that team for Jardim that won the league eventually in 2017. He has built this team, as you mentioned, James, rightly, that's been pretty amazing for the last 2 years at Lille with Christophe Galtier as manager. The problem is he didn't get on with Marc Ingla, who is the former Barcelona man who was the, let's say, the CEO at Lille, who is now leaving the club, I think, because he was going to be either him or Luis Campos. Luis Campos has a very strange relationship with Lille in the sense that he's not paid directly by the club, as in, like, you know, he's not part of the club per se as a sporting director. He's paid by the owner of one of the companies owned by the owner of Lille. It's a bit complicated, but anyway, I think they got that one sorted by Ingla's departure now, because I think Campos is by far more important to Lille and the way they work with their business plan, which is, again, finding all those young players, giving them a platform to shine and then selling them for a lot of money, like we saw with Victor Osimhen. Obviously come in completely unknown pretty much from Belgium, where he had a good season, but then having a very good season in France and being sold for up to 80 million to Napoli. So that's the idea. And for that, Ingla is not as important as Campos, of course. But I don't think that troubled the team, winning 4-0 very easily against Lorient on Sunday night, last night, where they were very impressive. Even without Renato Sanchez, who has been one of their star players. But Jonathan David, who did so well in Ghent last season, finally scored his first goal for Lille. That would be good. We saw Youssouf Yazici, who scored 3 against Milan. Who scored actually 2 hat-tricks so far in the Europa League, 1 against Milan, who did so well as a second striker in that game too against Lorient. So right now, all is good for Lille before they face Milan in France.
Yeah, Yazici became the first player to score a hat-trick away at San Siro against Milan since Rivaldo for Barcelona in 2000. Mm.
Lille are currently 2 points off the top of the table, 2 points behind Paris Saint-Germain in Ligue 1. Milan, very much top of their Classifica after their 3-1 win at Napoli. The first win away at San Paolo in how long, James?
Long time, James.
Right, and it was without Stefano Pioli, their inspirational manager, who was off with the Rona. Before the game, Zlatan revealing that Daniele Bonera, who was standing in as manager, was looking a bit nervous. What did Zlatan say to him?
He said, you look stressed out, but don't worry. There's Ibra. I'll take care of it. And boy, did he take care of it. Scored a sensational header to put Milan in front. Teo Hernandez cross, but you know he's still quite far out, you know, just coming into the box and gets ahead of Koulibaly and manages to actually put some power on it to glance it as well past Alex Meret. I thought Napoli actually played well for the most part of the first half, but then gradually got more and more frustrated. And Gattuso was talking about this afterwards, that you know, when they start complaining to each other about, you know, sort of misplacing a pass, or you know, when they start basically getting up in the referee's face and complaining about decisions, you know, they lose their heads. And ultimately, Milan went on and won this game. Ibra got a second. Mertens then pulled one back. But I thought Milan finished the stronger with Jens Petter Hauge scoring.
Lovely goal.
Scored late, came in late in the January transfer window, and scored on the night that his former club, Bodo Glimt, surprisingly won the Norwegian league as well. So I think the only kind of bum note for Milan on the back of the win was that Zlatan had to go off with a muscle injury in his left leg. He had a scan this morning, which shows that he'll be out for at least 10 days. That's when he's going to have another scan, but it's expected that he'll be out for a month. Now, you know, because he's started the season on fire, you know, he scored in every single game he's played in the league so far this season. There's a lot of talk about, you know, Milan being Ibra dependent, but there's no doubt he is very important to this team. But since he joined last January, I think they played 7 or 8 times without him, and they've been unbeaten. Remember, during the season, he had COVID-19 and had to isolate for 2 weeks. They were unbeaten through that spell as well. So, yeah, I think now that they've got Ante Rebic back, who played really well between January and August, and then started this season, had a bad elbow injury, you know, I think they were confident that he could play the centre-forward role. We'll have to see if Leao, who, you know, was playing really well before the international break and then went on international duty for Portugal's under 21s and got injured, whether he can come back and contribute in that as well. But Milan, you know, I think what Alvaro was saying about Atletico and having principles relates to Milan as well. You know, this is a very settled side that knows what it's about. All the players that they have bought have been bought with this system and this coach in mind. And yeah, they've been playing really, really well. And I think after beating Inter in the derby, to then go to Napoli and beat another rival for the title, even though, you know, Milan's objective this season is to just simply get back into the Champions League for the first time in 6 years, it's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. You can get a slightly shorter version of that answer in your long read about Milan on the Athletic. James.
It's true.
Yeah, which is excellent. You talk to all the big names.
Yeah, speak to Ivan Gazidis and Paolo Maldini. But it was really interesting to talk to. I mean, we were talking about Luis Campos earlier. Talked to someone who Milan have appointed who worked under him at Monaco, which is Geoffrey Moncada, who's the chief scout there. Frenchman, he says, you know, famous. He joked to me that he's a Monaco fan, the only one. And yes, has been doing a sterling job, as has the kind of other people involved in their recruitment and analytics department.
Monaco fan banter is my favourite kind of Euro football banter. Now, that's one of the Europa League games coming up on Thursday. It's a delicate one because there's only 1 point between Lille and Milan in Group H, with Sparta Prague hovering behind the Rossoneri. But let's get back now to the Champions League and Wednesday's action.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Wednesday, Group A will be in play with Bayern Munich, looking for their 15th straight Champions League win. Put their record in some perspective here. The previous best in terms of consecutive victories in this competition was 11 in a row, which they had set, and also Real Madrid earlier on in the teens, 2010s. But now they're looking for win number 15 in a row. They're hosting Red Bull Salzburg, which looks prospectively a good fixture for them, given that they beat the Austrians 6-2 away in Salzburg in the previous round. Alvaro.
No, I just wanted to say something about the records, because I think that they are happening at an incredible speed over the last 10 years in every competition. In Premier League, for example, this weekend, Liverpool got its 64th straight game with no losing at Anfield in the league. A year ago, they got 18 wins in a row. Manchester City got that 2 years ago. In La Liga, Barcelona under Guardiola set a record of straight wins in 2010. A year later, Jose Mourinho got 100 points in La Liga with Real Madrid. So this is a trend that is happening in every league, I believe, and in every competition, even in the Champions League too, in terms of records of goal. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 17 in the Champions League not long ago, I believe. So the polarization of football is massive. And in the last 10 years, it has become so obvious that it cannot be overlooked.
So you think it's because of the concentration of riches at fewer and fewer clubs?
Absolutely. And I think that in this decade, we have only had the champions in the Champions League from 5 different countries, not from France, yes, from Germany, from Italy, from Spain, from England, and from Portugal. Jose Mourinho's Porto. But in the 20 years before, from 1980 to 2000, teams from more countries were winning the Champions League. Even I remember Steaua Bucharest or Olympique Marseille winning it. So I think that instead of becoming more democratic football, as soon as the Iron Curtain fell in 1989, you could have thought that teams from the East will become stronger, as strong as the teams from the West of Europe. Hasn't been like that. The power has shifted from 1992 onwards to Western Europe, and the gulf in difference and in results is massive between the East of Europe and the West of Europe.
Now, in Group B, things are getting mighty interesting in the Champions League, where for all their money and concentration of riches, there are two big, big European sides, Inter and Real Madrid, who are currently set to miss out on the last 16, Alvaro. Put that in your theory and smoke it. This was the sound of Real Madrid coming back from the dead in the last clash between them and Inter. Rodrigo, la pelota para él, Rodrigo! And they meet again this week at San Siro. And as I mentioned, they're both currently not in the qualifying positions. Shakhtar are in second place. Borussia Mönchengladbach, the surprise leaders in this group. All right, so this looks absolutely crucial, the game at San Siro. And also potentially pretty crucial is the fact that Inter, as they go up against the Meringues again, have Lukaku back in the side. Ooh, James.
Yeah, Lukaku was outstanding really after the hour mark for Inter. And they needed him to be because they were playing against Torino. Relegation threatened Torino, whose manager was self-isolating with COVID-19. And the Torino side that was also without Andrea Belotti, who got injured in the warm-up. And yet they found themselves 2 goals to the good. At San Siro, Simone Zaza getting his name back among the headlines, what, for the, probably the first time since that penalty in Euro 2016. And Lukaku was brilliant. I mean, he scored twice. He assisted another one in a comeback as Inter won 4-2 in the end. It was interesting that, you know, as Conte turned to his bench to try and get his team back into the game, he has 5 substitutes at his disposal and he does not use any of them on Christian Eriksen as we approach what the 1 year anniversary of that signing and how it really hasn't worked out for the Dane. But look, I mean, Inter feel like they have been unlucky in the Champions League so far in terms of how well they played against Gladbach, the chances that they created and basically conceded 2 goals from 2 shots on target, one of which was a pen. Shakhtar hit the woodwork, dominated that, but again, didn't score. I think that has been one of the stories of their season, that they haven't got the wins that their chances or the kind of how well they played is kind of deserved. And boy, I mean, the pressure on Conte would have been huge had they not got the win at the weekend. I don't think it would have been enough to go into this Real Madrid game saying it's make or break for him, because I think, yeah, the reality is his contract is so huge that it's so expensive to sack him. He is practically untouchable at Inter. But Sergio Ramos missing. And we all know that, yeah, in the 7 of the last 8 games in the Champions League in which he hasn't played for Real Madrid, what has happened? Real Madrid have lost. So.
Well, yeah, Alvaro. So the prospects, the situation for Real Madrid not looking too rosy. A draw at the weekend with Unai Emery's Villarreal. Ramos out. A lot of doubts over Benzema's participation and possibly Casemiro as well and Militao.
Yes, Benzema did not train on Monday, so he's unlikely to play against Inter. Jovic, we have to remember that the second striker, he's got COVID-19, so the striker could be Mariano, a man that Zinedine Zidane barely uses. But however, whenever he plays, he scores goals. He scored the goal against Villarreal this weekend. Back in February, he scored the goal in El Clásico. But yes, I mean, Real Madrid has plenty of absentees, especially in the central corridor. And I believe that Real Madrid won the league thanks to Courtois, Ramos, Varane, Casemiro and Benzema. I mean, that central channel was key and it's kind of broken now with so many injuries. But Real Madrid, generally speaking, they are facing this group with the lack of conviction that Real Madrid used to have in the European Cup. And I think that, for example, against Inter, they got one of those wins because Inter is suffering from the same probably personality problems that Real Madrid is suffering. But I think that this is going to be really tricky for Real Madrid. They rely a lot on a player like Eden Hazard, and Hazard is still not playing very well. Another important player like Fede Valverde is missing, by the way, and he provides a lot of physicality. And one thing that happens to Real Madrid as well, and that explains very well their state at the moment, is that they don't believe that they can win games. For example, against Villarreal, they scored the first goal, and it looked like if they push Villarreal a little bit, they could score the second, and they didn't push that little bit because they don't have the confidence to do it. They generate half chances, but they don't create real goal opportunities. And this is something that, you know, as I said in a couple of podcasts ago, I believe that maybe this level is enough to fight for the league, but in the Champions League, you need more cutting edge. So I think that Real Madrid really is in real trouble here, because if they lose against Inter, this is something like not a chessmate, but almost a chessmate for Real Madrid.
It would leave them bottom of the group, although also depends a little bit on what Shakhtar do against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Rafa, a quick word on Gladbach and their remarkable performances so far in the Champions League. 6-0, their last result, which was against Shakhtar in Kiev.
Yeah, and Gladbach playing first, it's an early kickoff with the real opportunity to put pressure on Inter and Madrid with another win against Shakhtar. I think Shakhtar should have more players available. They were fairly depleted when they last came up against Gladbach. But the point is that Gladbach themselves have been struggling a little bit. Certainly in the league, their form has been a little bit indifferent. They only managed a 1-1 draw against Augsburg after taking the lead. Augsburg had a player sent off with about 30 minutes to go, and then they conceded an equaliser late on, which left them really frustrated, sort of the game that they kind of threw away, having lots of chances. But a little bit like Leipzig, in the Champions League, they've been absolutely outstanding. Still unbeaten. And I guess the way this group is shaping up, you probably have to beat Shakhtar if you want to go through. A win puts them in a great position, but they could still, depending on what happens in the other game, find themselves with more work to do ahead of those two games against Madrid and Inter. So it is a real opportunity, I think, for them to do something that very few people would have expected or even hoped for, which is to qualify in this group in first or second place.
Mm, remarkable stuff. The other game's Wednesday. You've got Group D and Group C. C has Olympiacos hosting Man City. The other game in that group sees Marseille continuing their noble attempt to go a second straight Champions League campaign without scoring a goal or getting a single point. They host Porto. They had the weekend off, Jules. Was that a kind of special dispensation for being really bad in Europe?
Almost, yeah, almost, James. No, they had their game postponed against Nice because Nice was a cluster for COVID-19. They had 13 players out, I think. So similar to what we saw against Lens 3 weeks before the international break, which, again, they had the weekend off before they played in Porto, and we saw how good that was for them because they got absolutely thrashed over there. So I don't know if it would be the same. They tried to get that game played against Lens this weekend on Sunday, and having the Lens game postponed, the win against Dijon, Lens said no, the league, I think, would have agreed to it just for Marseille. But from the moment that Lens said, no way, why would we do that to you? Say yes for that to you. It was not going to happen. So they're not happy. I don't know if maybe there would be a lack of rhythm kind of thing. I'm not really sure after the international break. But they have to react against Porto. I mean, one, AVB can't be humiliated again against his former club. Mm. You know, this is his team. He's a socio, he's a Porto socio, same with his family. He can't be humiliated again at the Velodrome this time, even if there's no fans. And there will be a point where just to get away from, you know, the narrative of like, you're one of the worst ever team in the Champions League.
Fair enough. In D, meanwhile, where it's Liverpool on 9 points, Ajax and Atalanta on 4, and Midtjylland on 0 at the moment. Ajax will be hosting Midtjylland, fresh from a 5-0 win over Heracles. Ajax currently with an Eredivisie goal difference of plus 32. It's November. While Liverpool host Atalanta, who they beat 5-0 in Bergamo last time out with that Jota hat-trick and all that. How concerned are the Bergamaschi about this trip to Anfield, James?
They are a little bit concerned because I think they look back on the Ajax game in particular in Bergamo, and I think they regret going 2-0 down in that and having to come back. The reality is that two of their last three games are away from home, but they're in a much better position than they were at this stage last year when they had nil point after three games and still managed to qualify. I think Liverpool have got in their heads a little bit because after that game, Gasperini said, look, enough is enough. We have to change. We're conceding too many goals, not just in this game, but in the league as well. And you could see, even against newly promoted side, Spezia, at the weekend, they played with the handbrake on a little bit. They weren't committing players forward as they usually do. They weren't pressing as high as they usually do. I think part of that is because of the international break. Rafa alluded to it earlier and how it's conditioned some of the performances club sides at the weekend. I mean, Gasperini was talking about how a lot of Atlanta's best players are South American. They're the Colombians. You look at that Colombia side that got hammered in Ecuador, 6-0, was it?
6-1,
you're playing
one,
at altitude.
I think
Papu went to play for Argentina. They played in Peru, I was unaware that a flight from Buenos Aires to Lima is 7 hours. So taking all that into account, I mean, the owner of Atlanta was saying the players, you know, turned up on Friday because we've got three games in this international break. They're coming back later than they usually do. They're knackered. And that was one of the reasons behind the 0-0. They still created a lot of chances against Spezia. But yeah, I suppose they might look at this as the same way that they did Man City last year, when, remember, City absolutely bashed them at the Etihad, and then they did slightly better at San Siro, and they got confidence from that for the final two games. So we'll see. But I think ultimately it'll come down to that game between them and Ajax in Amsterdam.
Huge. All right. Still to come in today's European-flavoured Totally Football show, we'll be getting one or two other bits of news, including the latest on Alan Pardew's career. That's up next.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Alan Pardew, much-loved former West Ham, Crystal Palace, Newcastle boss, and of course Den Haag, can't forget Den Haag in that list.
No, of course.
Has taken on another continental football role. There may not be room for him in the English game, but the Continentals still love him. Where's he gone, Jules?
To CSKA Sofia in Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. As a sporting director, not as a manager. So either he's eyeing up the job, and as a sporting director, you come in, you sack the manager, and then you say, you know what, I'm going to take over for a few games. And then you stay.
Jules.
Or he just wants to have a go at a sporting director job to see if he's any better, which can be too
in
hard.
In a market he knows so well, as you know, like Bulgaria. You know,
yeah,
that's,
and the language. He's obviously bilingual because, you know, it will never stop surprising us. This is a good squad, though. If you remember Jerome Sinclair, the former, he was one of Liverpool's very promising talent in the academy, plays there now. Younous Sankare, the former PhD player, plays there.
But where did Sinclair come from, Jules? He came from Watford, correct?
Yeah, and he was
really
young.
And Alan Pardew is taking the job of the guy who's just gone to Watford as sporting director.
Oh, really?
So, you know, it's, you know, ultimately, I'm sure he got a good recommendation when he said, I've got this guy, Jerome Sinclair. I mean, maybe, I think it's Cristiano Gioletto, who used to be at Udinese for a long time. You know, maybe he was already eyeing up Jerome Sinclair anyway, and that's just happened anyway.
Wow, that's some top-level dietrologia from James Horncastle. CSKA Sofia, as you know, listener, our third right now in the Bulgarian A League. Ludogorets leading.
The people of the forest.
Yeah, that's them. Yeah. Ronnie Clark's got a question for Jules. Says Ronnie, what is wrong with Ben Arfa? Watched him play against Reims, scoring for Bordeaux. Is he disrupted in the dressing room or just lazy? Only shows up once in 10 games. Yeah, this was a 1-0 win for Bordeaux, and he scored the only goal. Jules, what's your take on Ben Arfa?
I mean, I don't know how much Ronnie has seen him this season, but he's been Bordeaux's best player. I mean, he can't last 90 minutes because he obviously hasn't played for a long time. When he was at Valladolid last season, didn't count because he hardly played in that second half of the season. But so I think he still needs to get a bit fitter, which, considering his age, his lifestyle, considering this is Atem Ben Arfa, we're talking, I'm not sure how fit he will get, but certainly when he has the ball in his feet, where fitness doesn't really count, he's still incredible. And Bordeaux are not doing that well, but they certainly have him and Koscielny at the back to just hold the fort and almost hope for the best, because the rest is not very good. But he scored a very good goal. As Horny was saying, he had a really good performance the weekend before with Bordeaux. It's just that he tries to make things happen by himself pretty much in that team at the moment, collectively. And Josh Maja, the former Sunderland striker, is still there, but there's not much of a collective spirit yet. And I mean, Atem has never done too much into collective anyway. You know, he takes the ball, then he dribbles past fast people and then five people and then scores or tries to score. So we'll see. But it's just good to have him back. You know, as 33, it's probably the last big challenge in his career. And we'll see what happens.
That defeat by Bordeaux means that Reims have now lost 5 of their last 6 in all competitions, which is bad, but not as bad as Saint-Étienne. Hey, Jules?
Yeah, terrible run of form. 7 league defeats in a row, which equals their record. And Claude Puel in all sorts of trouble. And it's not just Wesley Fofana leaving quite late to go to Leicester, as we mentioned before many times. Just there's clearly something not working. I don't know if he trusts too many youngsters, maybe. They have a very good academy, but this is quite dangerous, especially when you're struggling for confidence and for rhythm, for results. But there's something clearly wrong there. They started the season quite well. I don't know how it turned so quickly, so badly.
Well, loads of other stories out there across the continent. Not sure we got time for too many more, but any other things that anybody wants to mention? Prandelli's return at Fiorentina, Rafa, anything from you? Alvaro, your thoughts on the 6-0 win over Germany by Spain?
did Spain win 6-0 against Germany?
The question is, when is the second set?
Yeah, I think we should mention it because obviously there's been a huge fallout from this. On the 4th of December, Oliver Bierhoff, who's in charge of the national team at the executive level, has to present a analysis, a report into the last 2 years of this supposed progression that Germany have been undergoing since the World Cup. And at that point, the German FA will decide whether to stick with Löw or maybe pull the plug. I think it's more likely that he will be able to get one more chance at redemption. But the pressure is building for people to react and for maybe the avoidance of what could be an even bigger disaster than the World Cup. Because if Germany play anywhere as bad and as disjointed and tactically all over the place as they were against Spain, which, you know, was a game that Spain could have easily won by double figures, and I'm really not exaggerating here, France and Portugal could knock Germany out quite easily. So it's a really big decision to make, and it'd be very, very interesting to see what happens at that next meeting in December.
Jules, you were complaining earlier about James Horncastle sending you constant texts through Paris Saint-Germain's game, but I was in Florida and my WhatsApp was just buzzing right throughout World's Strongest Man with you trolling Rafa about the Spain game.
Well, I uncorked that bottle, but I only sent one text. I
right,
just
no,
told
Jules
everyone to pay attention to that game, no more than that.
Yeah. Well, it was extraordinary. The kind of thing, I mean, it's a testament to the regard that Germany are held in, that everyone was so gobsmacked to see them lose like that. The biggest defeat since Fenn's 5-1 in Munich, eh?
Yep.
All right.
Could always get Sven in.
Yeah.
You know, if you decide against Jürgen.
Right.
Sven will take it.
Well, it is Spain who goes through to the semi-finals and final, that kind of last four of the Nations League, which curiously will be in October 2021. From the 6th to the 10th, that'll be over an international break, essentially. And the four teams involved will be put into smaller World Cup qualifying groups to allow them the weekend off to do that. That's France, Italy, Spain and Belgium. Who's excited?
Yeah, and it's in Italy, so we can all go with James and, you know, James can pay us all those lunches and dinners that he owes us if we can travel back, you know, at that time. But certainly for France, it's good because they missed out on the Nations League qualifiers the year before against Germany and the Netherlands. The Netherlands went through. But this time they were very good in Portugal. The game they had to win, really, the final of that group, which they did with a very impressive performance collectively overall. And I think you could see what Deschamps is trying to do. You could see the improvement. You could see the new players coming through. So it's all good at the moment.
Crazy that this is the first tournament held in Italy since 1990. Isn't that amazing? First international tournament.
First senior international tournament.
Okay,
yeah.
First senior international tournament, yeah.
And Spain hasn't hosted one since 1982 either.
That's even crazier.
They try. It's even farther back. They tried to, I don't know if this was a real attempt or not, but I think they tried to make like a joint candidacy with Portugal for a tournament. I don't remember which one. And that didn't work. But yes, that's a long time ago. But when it comes to the Spanish national team, I have to say that Monday evening, the day before the game against Germany, I listened to many radio shows, sports shows, and in Spain there was this consensus among journalists and reporters and opinion makers that the Spanish national team wasn't good enough this time, and you should have listened to those shows 24 hours later. So it was like passing from the night to day, from the darkness to the light. And to be honest, I think that Luis Enrique is doing a very good job. I believe that after he has tested around 40 players, it's time for him to try to find his lineup in March before the Euro starts in June.
Alrighty. Well, that brings us to the end of today's European Totally Football Show. Many thanks to you all for being part of it. James, Rafa and Jules, you'll be involved in the Goal Show on Tuesday and Wednesday on BT, the ideal way to stay across all of the Champions League action. And I'll be tuning in for that. I'm going to be sat at home quarantining, so I'm going to be enjoying that one with my feet up. Have a great show, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Listener, from all of us here for now, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.